The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and happy Saturday, and we're glad you're with us today. We have a special guest who's a friend of mine and just an all-around good guy, and he's running for office for the supervisor of Saratoga Springs to represent Saratoga on the county Board of Supervisors. So I want to welcome John Safford this morning. Hello,
morning,
John.
Rick.
How you doing?
All right.
All right. Well, it's good to have you on here. We've always had some good discussions, and I enjoy you quite a bit. John, I want to bring some more information to listeners about local politicians. We can't do this on the state and national level because I don't know them well, you know, but I want to get a little bit of, like, background and what makes a person and what makes a person want to run for office. So if we can go back in time, we're going to get in a time machine, go back in time to you as a young person growing up and attending school and what you learned a little bit back then, if you would, so we can learn a bit about you.
Actually, when I think back to that, my father was a school bus driver, and his job was to pick up the handicapped kids. And I remember he used to actually carry them. He'd go into the house and carry them out, which you don't do anymore. But every once in a while, he'd let us go with him. And I always remember that he was willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so at any rate, that impressed me a lot when I was a kid. And then, of course, I went to public school until sixth grade, and then my mother went back to work. She was a school teacher, but when we were very small, she worked. My father used to work three jobs to pay for the food. And so when she went back to school, we then went to Catholic school. She taught in a Catholic school. And my education has been completely in Catholic school since then, high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had a big influence on my life.
You know, it's funny you said that, just getting back to what you said earlier about your father being a bus driver. I'm retired, and I got a job as a school bus driver, driving a small bus for an independent company upstate here who has a school division, and I transport special needs kids to school. And my wife was a special ed teacher for 34 years, and she had multiply handicapped kids that she had to work with, and she would bring my daughters to class when they had the day off and she had school, because they went to private parochial school. And that you learn something from that. And my daughters, even now, they're in their early 30s, and they remember that. And I think it teaches you to respect people.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that, that experience was, you know, I hadn't thought about it until you asked me the question.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was telling for me.
Yeah. And I think about when you say respecting people, it's that they have something to offer, and they may not be able to go out in the workforce and work because of their we don't call it a handicap anymore, but because of their challenge. But they can instill in a person humility and acceptance. And I think that's two of the greatest things that a person can have. And, you know, that carries us through life, I think.
Well, I think it also gives you an appreciation for the differences, you know, that you don't judge people. Because some of those kids went on to be really outstanding contributors. Because I every once in a while I'd run into some of them, you know, and, you know, people overcome challenges.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
It's a good thing.
Hey, that's, you know, I think that goes to show people that you can overcome anything if you work hard enough and, you know, just keep at it. You started your political story when you were 15.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm talking about John Kennedy.
Right.
Yeah. Obviously, as a young Catholic, it was the first time there was a Catholic president, so mm-hmm. that was very impressive. But, you know, his most famous line was, "Ask not what you can do, what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." And I took that very seriously. When you are 15 mm-hmm. and looking for something to, I don't know, set your life on, maybe.
Sure.
I didn't know at the time that it was a very conservative statement. You know, I mean, he was a Democrat, but that is an incredibly conservative statement.
It is. And I think if you go back to listen to Kennedy's speeches, you'll find out that it sounds conservative today.
Yeah, it does.
But, of course, politics evolves like life does, and I don't even know if he'd be a moderate Democrat today. I think he would be probably a moderate Republican.
He probably would be. I mean, we don't know. Yeah.
But I mean, it's just listening to him, and I think you're right, that was a conservative statement. And that was kind of everything that went in that time period. I mean, we came out of the 50s and we came in the 60s and, Camelot was associated yes. with the Kennedy.
It was a wonderful, I mean, people who lived in that time frame, I mean, you could call it kind of, yeah, it was Camelot. That's mm-hmm. the way it was portrayed.
And right.
It was beautiful, even though, you know, he was assassinated, you know, yeah. 3 years later, and what a tragedy that was.
That hit the whole country.
Ugh.
Whether yeah. That kind of, I mean, it was almost like 9/11. Didn't matter what politics you had, we all came together as one country, and, I mean, everybody can remember where they were when Kennedy was assassinated.
Yes.
Everybody can remember where we were when 9/11 happened. And I know my father told me he remembers where he was when Pearl Harbor happened. And I think in tragedies like that, we remember things. Hopefully we can learn something from them. But, Kennedy was an amazing man.
Well, it is. I think, you know, if we're talking politics at all, I think it's also very important for people who are interested in that time to know who Johnson was,
mm-hmm.
who, when Kennedy was assassinated, took over as president, and then, of course, subsequently increased two things. You know, he was a very good politician. He was able to push through, you know, the war on poverty,
mm-hmm.
as well as increased our involvement in Vietnam.
Right.
And there are some people who think that Kennedy would have stopped that war where Johnson pushed it. But those two things, the war on poverty, again, I think you know that I'm an Army officer. But, I'm an infantry yeah. officer and was scheduled to go. I signed up for Vietnam, but they sent me to Japan. But when I came back in 1970, the whole world had changed.
Yeah,
I think a lot of it was because of a lot of the policy. I mean, from a political standpoint, a lot of the policies of Johnson caused a lot of changes.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we want to talk that much about it. those politics.
No, I don't. But I just kind of want to frame in, you know, those what that had on you as not politics, but as a person, because I know with me, you know, we're relatively the same age. You know, I'm 55, and I know you're 57, but...
thank you.
I think from the mid-60s on is when the country changed. You know, you had your folk singers and your protests, and it changed from the 50s mentality into a new generation of
people forget, number one, that there was a draft, that a number of people chose to go through Buffalo. Buffalo was a big center for going to Canada. A number of friends I know went. In a sense, you had a choice, but it's a choice I never even considered.
Right.
But when, and again, now you're starting to see with the withdrawal that we had from,
Afghanistan
here recently, how people... how service people felt at the time, coming home and then being a part of what, losing a war. And
right.
Of course it was not, I'm glad that veterans at least are more appreciated now when they come home.
Correct.
You know, we weren't very well appreciated at the time. You know, that hurt a lot of people, myself included. You know, I was very upset when I got home for a while.
Well, I spoke to my boss one day about, you know, we were talking about the war, and World War II vets were welcomed home, and the Korean vets were welcomed home, but Vietnam vets, I think because the times were changing, were really looked down upon. And he was an officer and came home, and he said he felt terrible. He remembers sitting in an airport, and people just came up to him and started yelling and screaming at him. And I think that was the beginning of, you know, our whole world changing, or at least America. But I think that that impression on us never goes away.
No, it doesn't.
And it doesn't. So I think that made us, you know, like you joined the service. Myself, I'll never forget where I was. I was in New York City after graduating. A bunch of guys, we went down for a week because I had worked at a Holiday Inn and we could stay half price. And they pulled numbers. So the Daily News down there used to come out at like 2-3 in the morning. So we ran downstairs, got a paper, and I was 351. So I never would have gone
anyway,
all
right.
And out. But and the way that was, I didn't want to enlist because that was terrible over there. I mean, you know.
I don't think any vet holds that against anybody. You know.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know. I remember my father-in-law in World War II. As soon as he graduated from high school, there were probably 30 guys from Saratoga that enlisted and went out together on a bus.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, everybody has their own opinion. But whatever opinion it is, it's part of our grain. And I think, you know, I mean, you came back from the war still. How long were you in
I was active for 2 years. It's a 6-year commitment, so
okay.
You could be called up at any time. But, you know, starting in 70, it started to wind down, at least the numbers did for a while. And, of course, the protests ratcheted up, and eventually we pulled out of there because of political...
yeah. Oh, I know.
Activity.
I
mean, I don't know if I want to continue.
No, that's fine. So, I mean, you were in the service, and, you know, I think that makes everybody a little tougher and appreciate what we have here in America. But in your sophomore year in high school, you played football.
Yes, I did. I got hurt very badly. I got a crushed kidney. And... back then, you know, today, you know, they'd have hospital, you know, they'd have everything coming there. But the coach thought I was faking, so he made me do laps, and you know, I barely made it home that night, you know, and then was in the hospital for about a week or a week and a half, you know, on drugs and trying to control the pain.
Yeah.
And getting operated on.
I can't compare your growing up with mine, although we have similarities. But our coach in high school, his famous saying, no matter how badly you were hurt, was get up and walk it off.
Yeah, that's right.
They were tough.
Yeah, Chuck DeRosa, he was a good coach. He was an excellent coach. And but he got fired because of it. That's kind of sad, I thought.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But while you were in the hospital, there was an older a patient in there that used to talk to you and gave you a list of
maxims,
and
probably it was because of, you know, who knows? I mean, like I say, I was on drug medications and all. And mm-hmm. he only came in the middle of the night, and he was all dressed in white, and, you know, because he had a name though. His name was Zimmerman, but he left me. That's when I really started thinking about maxims. It's one of the reasons I like the Bible, because of the Proverbs. I like the idea that there is such a thing as wisdom, mm-hmm. and it's often caught in these little tiny memes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, not nasty memes, but kind of wisdom memes.
Sure.
And, you know, like, for example, one of them was science reveals the wonders of God. I'm a religious person, but I've never entertained that there's a distinction between science and religion. For example, I'm very open to science. I study a lot of science.
Right? Sure.
And the other one, you know, things like this, that the essence of work is concentration. How often, you know, if you're at work and you don't concentrate, good things do not happen.
Exactly.
But if you concentrate on what you need to do, if you can, you know, that goes into this whole question you've been talking about, self-control. If you can, you know, if you want to do good work, you need to be able to control yourself.
Right.
To
focus, I think.
Focus on that, what it is you have to do. And that's hard, I think, for a lot of people.
It is. And I think you learn self-control early in life. And by early, I mean maybe, you know, when you're a young child. I was fortunate, and probably you were the same thing about going to Catholic school.
Right.
With the nuns, we had to be disciplined, but I think you learn self-control too, because you know if you do wrong, what's going to happen. And so you stay on the path of, you know, not wanting to go too far to the dark side.
I can still see Sister Kate. I remember Sister Kate. She was tough.
I know that.
She was tough.
I think everybody has one of those, you know. You were president of your, well, I want to back up a little bit. When did you, I know you like debate.
Yes.
So when did you enter, let's say, debating?
Well, yeah, I mean, after being hurt, and like I said, I have a lot of respect for these athletes who can get hurt and get back up. When you have a kind of a traumatic accident like I had, and you go, and it's very hard to get the edge back. I don't mm-hmm. know, when you play any sport, there's an edge you have to be on if you're going to be good at it, and I could never quite get that back. So I went into debating. I became a debater in high school. I was hurt in my sophomore year.
Okay.
And ended up on the debate club, and that also, in many ways, has changed, you know, as you grow up, and especially as you do different careers, you often find yourself in situations where, you know, you're not in agreement on something. And you learn in debate that there's a way, this is the way democracy is established. Nobody, I mean, probably, you know, if you out of 100 people, I mean, you can get people to agree on certain things, but you know, there's usually conflict. Mm-hmm. And the way you resolve conflict, I found, was through debate. But very few people, I think, really know what a debate is. And I think, you know, we talk about it.
But we talk about it, but I think two people have to be open-minded too.
Well, you have you have to understand that oftentimes in a debate, it's like you know, you take a positive and a negative, you know, stand, and you make arguments for the audience to make a decision. Oftentimes, it's like in a court of law when you have a prosecutor and a defender, they may or may not be believe exactly what they're saying in some cases, but they're making a case the best they can for their client or for their position, so that others can make an informed choice.
Sure.
You know?
Well, I think in a debate too, if I bring it back what you know used to be like, and most of what it is today, it's really not a debate, it's a black and white issue. But I always found that when talking with somebody that I disagreed with, there is a chance that you can learn something out of discussing an issue.
Yes.
It may not be, you may not walk away agreeing with the person, but you may have some different takes on what their side is.
Right. I mean, one of the things I object to these days is denigrating the word liberal, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to a liberal education college. I went to a Jesuit college, a Canisius college in Buffalo. And that's what it, being open-minded is what I think of as liberal. But of course, that's not the way it's implied politically anymore. But I think you need to approach, it's just hubris to think that your thoughts, you know, that you are the only one who knows the truth. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And today it seems like that's the way we're divided. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody says they know the truth.
And I think what that automatically does is turn the other person off.
Well, yeah, I mean, or you fight. You just shut yourself off and, right, you know, walk away, or, you know, or you end up fighting and arguing, yeah, you know. And it doesn't accomplish anything.
But I think a lot of that is going back to self-control.
Yeah, it does.
Take your time and you know, debate, because like I said, you may learn something,
yeah,
that, you know, is better than what you thought before. And maybe not everything, but you may learn something. We talked about, here again, I think this is building your foundation for running for politics. We talked a little bit about religion and how you can bring religious views into political discussions without infusing religion or your religion on the discussion. Yeah. Because not everybody may be of the religious,
religious background. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the way people look at religion. If you look at religion as something that changes you, as an individual, makes you a better person, or a person that's kinder, a person that's more self-controlled, that cares about other people. If you look at religion that way, it actually goes back, I think, way to what we were just talking about, and that is the idea that that discipline that you get, does it teach you to be obedient? Or does it teach you to be self-controlled? Does it teach you to be a better person? And what a lot of people think religion is about is being obedient to these laws, right? And in a way, that's the way, you know, again, if I were to define what a conservative is, it's someone who's self-controlled and doesn't need to be controlled by the government.
Sure.
I mean, that's the way I think of a conservative. And so the less, you know, but then again, this is where I think religion is important to a society, because people who don't have religion or you know, that kind of self-control often only have the law,
mm-hmm.
you know, to control other people. And so instead of a country where the Constitution protects us from the government, the laws turn out being the government to control the people. And there's a huge difference there.
Sure. For me. Well, it's like me when I first met you. I never knew you. I mean, when you meet somebody, first of all, you don't know whether Democrat or Republican. We don't wear a sign on our chest. Some people have it tattooed, but you don't see it. Yeah. And I didn't know religion, what you were, and that doesn't matter. I mean, you could have been Jewish, you could have been Methodist, or whatever, and that doesn't matter. But what I found was that you were easy to talk to, and we get in debates on certain subjects, and I didn't agree with you on one of them, but... Sure. And I respected you because we could talk. And then I, you know, when I found out that you had religious convictions and that made you the person you were, and it may not make everybody the same, you know, I respected you a little more because you didn't bring that out and say, all right, look, I'm religious. I want to tell you that right now. But I could see how it made you a very easygoing, nice person. I never heard you say anything bad about anybody. And I think that will play well in your political career that you're going for right now.
Yeah, I hope so. I do think it makes a difference. I do, because of that, I respect everybody. You know, but that's because I see, you know, the image of God in people,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is sort of, you know, kind of strange, I guess, for a lot of people.
Well, but, yeah, I think so. But I think it goes back to the point where we can't think about discussing anything. It's either black or white.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sad. Now, one of the things that when you were in the JCs in Johnson City, you would.
Yeah,
put down a quote to me that it really resonated with me. And it said, economic freedom is best won by free men through free enterprise.
Yes, that's one of the major tenets of the JCs.
Yeah, and I think today we should amend that to men and women.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't like to use the term men as inclusion of both, which I think it does, really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it does in the Bible.
Yeah. And it does, I think, it always did in life. I mean, you know, men, not man, if you said man, you know, whatever, but that's there. I just found that quote really inspiring, because I've been thinking about that a lot since we talked about that, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And I think we can be more open in, it's very hard to be open in our national politics and state politics. I think locally we use the tools that will best serve the citizens of who you're representing.
Yeah,
and I think that's the key in local politics. We shouldn't worry about national politics.
No, national politics. But I mean, when you're saying that, I also think, I mean, it's all about winning today, mm-hmm. rather than trying to do the right thing.
Yeah,
you know, so that affects a lot.
Sure. There was a fella that. About 8 years ago, you were at the transfer station.
Oh, yeah. And a huge change for
me. Tell us about
well,
that.
Well, you know, I mean, I'll tell you this. I went, I never realized how deep I had buried V Vietnam. And a number of years ago, 6-7 years ago, I was at the transfer station, and I had just started to wear a little army pin because I just had buried it. So this guy saw the pin, and he said to me, "You were in the army?" I says, "Yeah." And he said, "Welcome home," to me. And I couldn't talk to him. I had to walk away. I went and cried for 10, 15 minutes in my car.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that that was so deep. But it also helped me. It helped me. I mean, it's one of the, you know, I've always, you know, I was a politician in college, you know, and I know I'm pretty good at doing that, you know, and I have a lot of experience. It was then that I said, okay, well, I don't know. It just kind of freed me up from something. I don't know what it was. It was simple,
yeah,
but it was profound for me.
I think today, when we see a veteran of any war now, Vietnam, Korea, or even Iraq or Afghanistan, the first thing we say is, you know, thank you for your service.
Right now.
And I think that makes the vet feel like what they were doing was for the country, not for anything else. Right. And I think it's about time that everybody or most people will say that when you see a veteran. And I think, like you said, it helped you out an awful lot. And I think they appreciate it too. And as well, they should, because when you're in the service fighting, it's not like it is on TV where John Wayne and Robert Mitchum in their 30s or 40s, you're 18, 19, 20-year-old kids that are put in some bad conditions. And I think that's why you carry a lot of baggage after you get out, because you can't process.
Yeah, I mean, I if you know, I'm the Elks veteran chairman here, and do a lot of things with vets. And I mean, there's lots of reasons why, you know, vets have a hard time coming home. I mean, first of all, you were overdoing something important and your life was very structured. And then in a day, everything changes for you. You know, I mean, just getting out of the service is traumatic. Many, I mean, suicide rates are very high. I mean, they don't know how to deal with that. And, you know, and a lot of times the families don't understand, you know, what that transition is. It took me 6 months or maybe almost a year before I kind of came out of whatever it was that I was going through at the time. So I'm very empathetic to vets getting out. So I do a lot of stuff for vets.
That's great. Now, I know you had, a career, especially the last few years you were head of homeowners associations.
Right. I mean, it goes back to that trauma. You know, when I was in the intelligence service, and we worked with early computers. We detected atomic bomb explosions. And so I had an exposure to computers then. It was very early on, you know, we're talking the 70s here. And when I got out, to try to straighten my mind out, I went to a computer programming school in Syracuse and learned how to program computers. And so I owned a computer company for 25 years. We specialized in law enforcement primarily. And then for the last 25 years, I've been in I've been what's called a professional managing agent for small, for homeowners associations, which are small communities. I'm sort of like a city manager or that type of person. So I've been doing that. So, you know, in terms of becoming a supervisor, you know, the background that I have, technical as well as management, and legislative, you know, you have to do everything.
Sure.
You know, so I have a very good background to do it.
Yeah. And you left one thing out, dealing with people
yes.
who may have a problem.
Oh, yeah.
and you can deal with them and try and get it solved.
Yes.
And
you know, they say all politics are local. Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing more local than a homeowners association.
That's right. You know, I think all of this, what we were talking about right now before, leads me into the question of how can you best represent Saratoga Springs as a Board of Supervisors? And I think you've shown from your childhood up through now that you're running is that you always kept your focus in dealing with anything that was presented to you, good or tough.
Yeah.
And you coming out of the war, I know it bothers a lot of vets coming out, but you could focus, keep your focus and get into your own business.
Right. Yeah,
so I think everything that makes your character will add to you being a good supervisor. So how can you best represent the citizens of Saratoga Springs on a county level?
Well, a question, since I last talked to you, I mean, I've had other questions asked. And, of course, we have we don't need to talk about that today because we have a difference of opinion on the city, the way the city is organized. But the county is also organized very differently from other counties. Mm-hmm. In this county, we have 23 supervisors. There's two from Saratoga and two from Clifton Park, but the rest are all basically the local mayors, you know, for their communities, their towns. And 23 people come together to try and do the legislative work for the county. And I like the way they do it. I've been going to a lot of meetings. But what they do basically is they divide up into various committees. There's a number of committees. And the committees all meet publicly. They're all recorded. It's all up front. And it usually has to go through any kind of legislation has to go through three committee meetings before it's approved. Or two committee meetings, and then it's approved at the monthly meeting of all 23. And it is unusual, it's unique, but it is so efficient for me. I like efficiency. I like being able to get stuff done. And so by the time it gets up to the monthly meeting, they'll get 20 or 30 or 40 resolutions passed in a half an hour.
Wow.
I mean, it is just the best. And I number one, I like it. I like the way it works, and I know that I can work in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to kid you just a little bit, okay?
Yes.
You've got a county administrator.
Yes.
Who acts maybe a little bit like a city manager.
Maybe a little bit like a professional managing agent.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
and I you have department heads.
Yes.
And you have the Board of Supervisors who really act like the council.
Yes.
And pass the legislation.
That's correct.
So I'm not going to bring.
See, I knew you would do this to me.
No. Okay. I don't want to talk about that because I just joke around with people on that. And when people look at me, I've got a CM tattooed on my forehead.
Yes, yes.
But that is an efficient way. And I think the committee portion of it adds to a lot of the reason why it's more acceptable on the county level because everybody takes part. I mean, everybody's on a committee, maybe not the same committee.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But every supervisor's on, and they know what the details are of getting something passed.
Exactly.
So explain why Saratoga has two, because the last time we talked, I you brought something to me that I never even thought of. Why Saratoga has two supervisors and Clifton Park has two. I mean,
that's all by just the population. It's population.
So we had a little spat last year, I think during COVID, where small towns were feeling like they were getting beat up by the big, let's say Clifton Park and Saratoga.
I think it was the opposite way around. Actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happens is in the larger towns, you have more turnover because there's more political activity.
Sure.
And in the smaller towns, generally, the supervisors have been there for a long, long time. And with our system, the longer you're there, the more power you have. Mm-hmm. And so there was a time at some point, I don't know, a number of years ago, where, appointing chairs to the various committees is a big deal. And there was a time when only the small towns were appointing chairs, and they were always appointing small town chairs.
Okay.
And when COVID happened, I mean, let me just talk to you from a professional managing agent standpoint.
Definitely.
Again, I've been doing this for a long time. And as it turns out, when things kind of go south, you fire the manager. And the average manager in a homeowners association lasts 7 years. So during this COVID, there was a lot of things that happened. And I think what happened, it's pure politics, but it is what happens. What's called the larger towns kind of took over, and the manager was let go, and another manager was brought in.
Oh, okay.
And which is, I know it's unusual because we're not used to that change over here, but it's very common within our profession to have things like that happen. But the larger towns. Now, if you're asking me how I can best serve Saratoga Springs, I have to know how that works. And frankly, if I'm really trying to do the best I can for Saratoga Springs, I need to work with that. I don't know if most people don't know what a supervisor does, but whenever your taxes, your income taxes go to federal or state, those monies come back through the county, through services and grants and various things. And that's what the supervisor's job is primarily, is to make sure that we get our fair share of that back in Saratoga Springs. And in a nutshell, that's sort of what a supervisor does. And being able to work with everybody, and I'm not saying that you don't care about those other towns, but in politics, that's what you're there for.
Sure.
You know, they're fighting for their communities. You fight for your community, and you do it the best way you possibly can. A lot of people don't understand what it's all about.
Well, I think they don't, and I don't even think a lot of people understand city politics and what it's about. I think they vote. I've always said, Most of the time, politicians get elected because of their star power. They appear, they may not know what they're doing, but they're likable. And, they haven't really researched what they're running for. And unfortunately, they get elected because they've either grown up in an area and people like them and they have a lot of friends. But if everybody should go to a council meeting, everybody should go to a board of supervisors meeting. Yeah. I mean, understand what the vote is very important, and we're very fortunate to have that in this country. But learn the issues, learn what they do, and I think we'd be better off. And I think having a background in that type of setting and knowing and then going to the meetings and seeing what it is, you have qualifications that a lot of people don't.
I do. It's like I was made for doing this job.
That's right.
You know, and know, time limits are natural here.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about debating?
Yeah.
You'll have to debate at the meetings, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't understand how that works. So, for example, if a law is going to be passed, somebody has to write a very specific resolution. It's very specific. It lays out something that either you can be for or against. Mm-hmm. Now, you might argue over the wording of that resolution first, but sooner or later, what you're doing is you're actually voting or debating a particular, very specific resolution. And that's what a lot of people, I think, don't understand about the way laws get done in this country and in this, you know, in this county, all right down, and why debate is important to a democracy.
Good debate.
A good debate.
Yeah. And I have you had any debates yet on?
Well, I mean, the League of Women Voters had a debate, you know.
Has that gone by already?
Yes.
That has.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and I have one tomorrow with Saratoga Today.
Okay, yeah, Saratoga tomorrow Today. Night. Any more in October?
I think that's it.
You know, we're getting to the point where it's in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I think about, you know, I was going to say, well, we got all October yet. You don't want to use all the debates up too soon. And here we are in the middle of October.
It goes fast. It
and
goes
election
so fast.
Day is only the 2nd of November, so there's not much time.
No.
And now you're getting door-to-door?
I do a lot of door-to-door, a lot. I'm trying to be very specific these days, but I've probably been on half the streets now in the city.
Okay.
Or more than half. I've literally knocked on over 1,000 doors, probably mm-hmm. talked to over 500-600 people. Mm-hmm. I think that's important.
Oh, I do too.
You know, it's a little humiliating sometimes, you know. It's funny when you do this, you don't necessarily remember the really good meetings, but you always remember the bad ones.
The bad ones, yeah. Well, you know, you can learn on that, too.
Well, you do. I mean, you learn to be able to shuff it off, and, you know, not everybody's going to like you.
Exactly.
You know, so you just work through it.
Yeah, here we go with a preconceived notion rather than talking. Yeah. And
it is fascinating how effective that is. In other words, oftentimes people will say, "What's your party?" And if you say the wrong party, they shut the door on your face, which is interesting.
Yep.
You know?
I don't think as much today as it was in the past, but people usually don't vote party line.
I've kind of thought that here. Yeah. I don't know if that's true anymore. Yeah. You know, that true. I don't know.
Why I think it's sad if people don't understand the candidate. I mean, you could be one party and not tell somebody, what party you are. But when you, like yourself, if I'm a Democrat, which I'm an independent, but if I'm a Democrat and you're talking to me, you could very easily switch my opinion because I know the other candidates, where if I didn't know you, he's another guy that's running on a Republican ticket, and, you know, why should I vote for him?
Well, you prejudge what that means. And I think a number of years ago, and I think the last time was when A.C. Riley ran, first woman mayor of the city, and it was what they call nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. You didn't run on a party. You just ran. Now you'd still get nominated or endorsed, but it would just be your name there, not by party. And I thought that was a better way of doing things, but I guess you can't go back. Once you make that move, you can't go back
old
way. Yeah.
Now that's legally you can't go back?
I think so. Oh, I've asked about that because I thought that was a much better way.
Yeah, because I know there are some people that want to go back to that way, but that may be one of the
at least what I could find out, you can't go back once you change.
All right. Well, that, and you know what? It may be good that way if more people want to vote one way.
Yeah, you vote for the person instead of the party.
That's right. So, you know, I understand that I think what we get from this is your values, your background certainly qualifies for the office and what you want to do. I'm glad you had mentioned about the small towns, because I always thought it was the other way around. And so that's kind of a handicap, because there's more small towns than there are
two, you know, cities. I mean it's sort of a balance. It balances out. I mean, I'm sorry that we're making that designation right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are being in a, it, that's just the way it's getting classified, but sure. People are we're interested in the entire county. But Saratoga Springs has unique needs, mm-hmm. and we need to be represented with two solid, supervisors who know how to do the best we can for our city.
Right, and you just said, and you have to balance two things: what's best for the county, and what's best for Saratoga Springs, which you represent.
Exactly.
And every supervisor has the same job. Best thing for the county and what you can do to make a better town or city that you live in.
That's a great example of what a democracy is all about.
Mm-hmm.
There's a selfish side to it, and then there's an altruistic side to it. And how you balance those makes you a good or bad legislator.
Sure. Well, John, I don't know if you have anything else to say about...
I always like talking to you.
Right? Yeah, I always like talking to you, too. I've learned to respect you, because you are that type of person that you can talk to and not agree with everything, but yet, I've learned some things from you, and we'll keep on going.
All right.
Yeah, maybe I can impress you enough with a debate.
We'll see.
But no, I appreciate it. And John, remember, John Safford is running for Saratoga County Supervisor, representing the city of Saratoga and the county level. And Election Day is November the 2nd. So that's coming around the corner. And if you really want to ask John any questions, he'll be glad to come at you from that center outlook, and we'll go there. Correct.
Yeah. Open to talking to anybody.
Now, do you want to give any information out, like your phone number?
Yeah, sure. My phone number is 518-331-9369. You can text me. It's probably better if you want to ask a question.
Sure.
Although I answer my phone 24/7.
Okay.
I've always done that, and I will continue to do that.
Excellent.
And at one point, I had close to 8,000 people could call me any night. Now, if I'm a supervisor, it's a little more than that.
Exactly.
But I still will continue to do that. Or you can send me an email at jsafford3@gmail.com.
Okay. And I would urge listeners to look at the candidates and what they stand for. And if you can, in the next 2.5 weeks, is kind of look at that, get to know them so that you can make an informed decision when you go to vote, and just don't pull a lever, because that's really not what politics should be like. So, John, thanks for being with us this morning.
Glad to be here. Right? Okay.